Hello and welcome to the Toddcast. Today, for no particular reason, except that this is a topic that's bounced around in my head for a while and thought I wanted to talk about, we are going to discuss mental health. And I'm immediately, you know, drawn to think about, you know, me saying we are going to discuss in the context of me talking to myself in the car, which we'll just start off with that. You know, a lot of people will kid around and say, you know, people who talk to themselves, you know, that's the first sign of them, you know, losing their marbles. And I disagree with that notion. I've known quite a few people who have, you know, been known to talk to yourself. It can be helpful. There, you know, are bits of your brain that are activated by speech that can, you know, help you remember things or work through something by, you know, verbalizing those items. And, you know, as the cast here goes on, we can talk about, you know, how that relates to me and my overall mental stability. But I've talked to myself for, you know, as long as I can remember. Even as a kid playing, you know, you have dialogues, you know, between your action figures or whatever, or just when you're, you know, doing your own thing and you're talking to yourself, there's nothing wrong with that. And it kind of upsets me, when people, you know, give people grief for doing so, particularly when it involves, you know, children. Let the little fellas do what they're going to do. It's not hurting anybody. If they're, you know, holding on both sides of a conversation, you might want to, you know, see what that's about. They could just be, you know, imaginative and holding both sides of a conversation, or it could be, you know, something, you know, deeper, in which case, you know, consult a professional. But jumping immediately to, hey, this guy's talking to himself, he must be crazy, is unnecessary stigma and, you know, pretty poor armchair psychology. So let's not do that. But now that we've gotten that out of the way, you know, it's important for all of us to have, you know, discussions and open dialogues about mental health. As, you know, it's an invisible problem, you know, issue for a lot of people. You know, somebody, you know, breaks their arm or leg or, you know, gets slashed up by something, you know, has some sort of, you know, disease that's got them hacking and coughing and whatnot. That's pretty obvious. You can see that person's, you know, in a bad state and you can help them out. But, you know, somebody who's got some problems on the inside, that doesn't necessarily show. And those people oftentimes, you know, need our support just as much, if not more. And so I think it's, you know, it's good to talk about these things, you know, with your friends, with your loved ones, you know, approaching random strangers and you know, asking them about their dreams is perhaps not the best plan, but if that's your thing and the other person's into it, go to it. I'm talking more in line with, you know, those close to you and, you know, being available and helpful to them in their hours of need. But, you know, you do what you like. I guess to kind of throw this into some context, and, you know, what with this being my podcast where I talk about, you know, mainly myself and my experiences, we'll go ahead and, you know, insert me into the topic of the day, being mental health, and talk a little bit about my, you know, my sort of history and background there. Probably, I would say, from about puberty on, generally speaking, I'm okay. I'm good. I can cope. Around puberty or so, I would say I started to experience what I would later, you know, find out and have diagnosed as bipolar disorder. I think that, you know, depending on, you know, who's listening to this and at what point in my life you've known me, if you have, that's not necessarily a surprise. For others who, you know, have known me, you know, more recently, that's probably, you know, a bit of a shock. You know, you say bipolar disorder, and people who are at all familiar with it tend to have, you know, an immediate, you know, thought as to what that means and what that looks like. And I guess that's maybe bullet point one, is that, you know, oftentimes, you know, what you think you know about a disorder is not necessarily true. You know, not all autistic people are like Rain Man. Not, you know, not all, you know, people who are depressed necessarily, you know, come across as, you know, overly gawky and sad all the time. You know, folks exhibit different behaviors and, you know, different things based on what they've got going on. There's no sort of catch-all. So, you know, you say bipolar to some people and they just expect that, oh, the raving madman 1 second, you know, crying, you know, bag of sadness, you know, the next. And sure, that does, you know, account for some of it for some people, but that's not necessarily, you know, the lump sum total of everyone's experience. Like I said, it wasn't a thing that I even knew about or recognized as being that for many, many years. Like I said, when I, you know, was in high school, you know, it was, I had a little bit of a rough go of high school. I, you know, our family did not have a lot of money. I did not have a lot of, you know, the nicer things. I was, you know, not particularly popular or athletic. I was smart, but that only gets you so far in school in terms of social circles. Not a particularly attractive lad. Not good with the ladies. You know, and when you're a teen, all of those things kind of, you know, can team up on you and make you a little blue. And that's, you know, that's to a degree to be, you know, expected. There were definitely points where it hit me harder than others. And I think that there were points where that hit me a little harder than probably your typical youngster who would have been in similar circumstances. There was a fair bit of my youth where there was periods where I seriously questioned my faith and or was, for lack of a better word, persecuted for such, or rather for my lack thereof. And maybe that's a discussion for a whole other podcast that we can come back to later. But that also tended to weigh in on things. But, you know, I'd get bummed out, and I would, you know, put myself up in my room and, you know, just listen to music and be all morose, or, you know, slap a cassette into the Walkman and go for, you know, a walk. And when I say walk, we're talking, you know, 45-minute, hour-long, throughout all of the streets of my town walk, like, journeys, not just a quick, you know, hop, skip, and jump around the block. And that helped. And like I said, I didn't really think too much of it. At points where, you know, I wasn't, you know, in sort of sad mode, I would be what I would probably best describe as wacky. I feel like I've always had a pretty decent sense of humor. Saying class clown puts maybe too much spin on the, hey, look at me aspect of that, which is not really, you know, what I was into back then. But, you know, very much, very rambunctious, very, very high energy, let's say. kind of bounced off the walls. And it kind of shifted between, you know, one form or the other. You know, and I used to kid around with people and say, you know, oh, I'm manic depressive, because that's what they called it back in the day. That's what I was familiar with. And, you know, there's a kick-ass, you know, Jimi Hendrix song about it. And so that was the context I had for it. And it seemed to make sense. I would be, you know, all wacky, crazy, manic. And then there would be points where I'd get, you know, depressed. And it made sense. And you know, I never saw a shrink or anything to get that diagnosis. But I knew myself well enough to, you know, kid around and say, ha-ha, that's what it is. You know, and that persisted throughout high school and into college. I'd say it was probably around college that it dawned on me that it seemed to be a little bit cyclical. I would, you know, be doing fine and having good times and everything was great and groovy. And then I would, you know, wake up one morning and just be, just for no well-accounted reason, just be bummed out. And it's hard to describe, and I can only imagine it's hard to comprehend if you've not experienced it yourself. But there were points in that, you know, depression type of mode that I would be in that I would actively seek to amplify it, if that makes any sense. You know, I would realize, you know, I'm bummed out right now, and there would be a part of me that just said, fuck it, we're going to embrace this shit. And I would, you know, select a cassette for the Walkman, because that was the technology of the day, and I would pick, you know, whatever the saddest or depressing music I could put in there to go, you know, go on the walks, and I would drive myself deeper and deeper into the darkness, as it were, intentionally, with full knowledge that that's what I was doing, and that was the plan. I'm happy to say that, you know, throughout all of the dark times, so to speak, throughout my life, I've never taken it to the extreme of actually wanting to harm myself or feel suicidal. And for that, you know, I definitely consider myself lucky. Others with similar conditions are not so blessed. And I don't want to, you know, diminish that aspect or make light of that. I fully understand that, you know, that's, I got lucky on that front, but at the same time, it was very real, to me, the sadness, the depression, you know, and I, for whatever reason, would just, you know, dive headfirst into it. It was either that, or, I would, you know, grab something, you know, particularly hardcore, to throw into, the music player. You know, some Nine Inch Nails or Ministry was particularly, effective for this purpose, and would just put on the headphones and just crank those sons of bitches up until my ears, like, literally hurt. I guess that's probably as close to harming myself as I would come. It's just, you know, I am this miserable bag of whatever, and I'm going to punish myself. And it's a weird thing to say out loud. And again, if you've never experienced it, I imagine it's a weird thing to hear. And I don't wish it on anyone. But if you are listening and you know what I'm talking about, you know what I'm talking about. And I guess for everyone else, just be aware this is a thing that happens. Doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that person is trying to, you know, accomplish any particular goal. It's just a weird thing that, you know, maybe they need. to help cope with things. And that's kind of how that worked for me. And like I said, I kind of found out or kind of discovered that, you know, this seemed to be a little cyclical. I would, you know, go into this, you know, bout of depression, and it would last, you know, a few days to a week. And then, again, without any necessary provocation or rationale, you know, I would suddenly be all good, and I'd be back to, you know, wacky, happy, fun, Todd, you know, having good times and, you know, just enjoying life with the rest of the world. And it seemed to happen about every 3-4 weeks, to the point where, you know, while I was in the Navy, still had, you know, this condition persisted. And the fellas, jokingly but strangely accurately, you know, they first started, you know, referring to them as my black moods. 'Cause it was pretty obvious. I mean, when you're, you know, kind of on your own, like when I was in high school, and I mean, I shared a room with my brother, but he's 10 years younger than me, and really, we didn't, like, hang out. So when I was up in my room, I was kind of up in my room by myself. You know, these kinds of things can get obfuscated. But, you know, when you're in a dorm room or in the barracks and you have a roommate, it's real obvious to that other person that, you know, you kind of flip the switch and your whole, you know, demeanor and outlook has changed. It's real obvious to those folk. And like I said, the boys in the Navy, you know, originally dubbed it my black moods, and eventually kind of honed in and locked into, you know, what I'm sure is not politically correct, but nevertheless, you know, they would say, oh, Todd's on his period, you know, as a reference to PMS and so forth, which is not fair to anyone. But at the same time, about once a month, 3 to 5 days, I would have a drastic mood shift. I can understand where they, you know, draw the parallels there. Again, not defending their terminology, but I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't understand, you know, where they were coming from on it. 'Cause that's about what it would be. And like I said, it for generally speaking, no good reason, this is how that would work. Like, I would just wake up one day and just be in depression mode and would, you know, deal with that for a few days. Like I said, more often than not, would cling to it, would just dive head first into it. And I think maybe there was a part of me that's like, let's fucking do this, let's get this out of our system so we can go back to being normal. Or, you know, what I considered normal for me. And, you know, that persisted, you know, throughout the Navy. Like, I, you know, in retrospect, I probably should have seen one of the shrinks. In retrospect, I'm really glad that, you know, I served during peacetime, because even though I know that I never, you know, had any intentions to harm myself or others, it's a little upsetting to think that there might be folks, you know, with live ammunition going through a similar thing that, you know, again, are not so lucky on that front. But I came out of, you know, that the other side and, you know, went, you know, moved to Florida and, you know, got a job there. I would be a liar if I didn't say that, you know, there weren't some substances consumed whilst in Florida that, in some circumstances, one could, you know, perceive as self-medication. In other contexts, you could look at that as, you know, throwing fuel on a fire. Funny little thing about weed is, you know, it makes you feel good while you're smoking it, but at the same time, it is a depressant. you know, and what might make you feel better about your miserable situation for a few moments might chemically actually add to your overall bad time, which is not really a thing I considered at the time, and it wasn't until a shrink actually, you know, brought that to my attention that I kind of put any thought into that and worked towards changing my ways there. You know, throughout all of this, there were often, like I said, it was generally cyclical. There were points in times where there were triggers to where I might be doing fine, but if a thing happened, we're going to flip that switch, whether it's time or not. Generally speaking, it had to do with, finances. For most of my life, I have been one broke-ass motherfucker, for a good chunk of it, add to just not having money, being fairly well in debt, for one reason or another, credit cards, student loan, whatever. And not having funds is, you know, a deficiency that will act on your psyche, for sure. The other big one was just loneliness. Like I said, for a good chunk of high school, I did not have a girlfriend. The ladies did not want to have thing one to do with my weirdo ass. And that weighs on a young man's brain. You know, a little later, in the college time frame, had a girlfriend. We were very much on again, off again, and when we were off again, that was saddening, and then right before I went off to college, during, one of our on again periods, she got pregnant with, a daughter, which made the off again periods that followed even harder, and added a new trigger to the mix, in that, while when I was at college, they were down home and I didn't see them and missed them. After boot camp, we got married, and not too terribly much longer, we got divorced and, maybe again, that's a topic for another time. But we did, and with me being in the Navy and them being, in Ohio, anytime I would think about, my daughter and how, I was not there for her, and that would make me, understandably upset, and so, if at any point any of those sort of three things would surface for any particular reason, there's a real good chance Todd was going to, take a little dip down on the emotional roller coaster that I was riding on at the time. And like I said, by the time I got to Florida, things had kind of sort of peaked out in terms of that. I was broke and lonely and away from my daughter. I mean, at that point, the situation was such that I had no contact with her at all. The way Ohio child support situations work is, I paid child support. It, had arrangements for it to come, out of my paycheck. Absolutely was, even if that weren't the case, I'd have written the check. Like, she's my child and I, need to support her. And I had to keep the child support agency, up to date on my whereabouts. This is my address. This is how you can reach me. And, the ex had to do the same, but if I wanted to find out where my daughter was, to get an address to send her something or try and get a phone number to try and call her. They were not allowed to just give me that information. And as frustrating as that was for me at the time, I understand why that is. You know, I wanted to reach out for good reasons to, you know, stay connected and help out and be a part of their life. I fully understand that there are a lot of, you know, fathers out there that would use that information for not the best purposes, and it's in that woman and that child's best interest that, you know, dad does not get that info. Like I said, I understand why that is, but you could ask them, hey, I would like to know this information, and they would then go to the mother and say, hey, he's asking for this, you know, can we give it to him? And they have the option to say yes or no, and if they say yes, then okay, they'll turn around and give me the info. Numerous requests were made over long periods of time, none of which resulted in my, you know, getting any means to contact her. So I was completely cut off. And as I said, broke and forming various less than healthy habits and without any sort of companionship, let's say. And, you know, the lows got low, and the, you know, the manic period got a little more manic than were possibly necessary. And it wasn't until several years into being in Florida that it started to become a problem more so than just in my head. I was working as a landscaper, and the thing about depression is that in a lot of cases for a lot of folks, you kind of, I don't want to say forget to do certain things, but that there are certain things that are just not a priority for you. In my case, eating was one of those. I wouldn't be hungry, and I wouldn't want to whatever, and I just didn't eat. And, like, to the point where I was, you know, not getting enough nutrition, and, like, I'd bend down to rake up some leaves or whatever, and when I, you know, went to stand up, would get all lightheaded and dizzy. And I found that this kept happening. And at the time, didn't put the two and two together, just, wow, it's weird, I keep getting lightheaded, I should probably see a doctor. And I went and talked to the doctor, and the doctor, you know, asked me about, you know, what are your eating habits, and, you know, it was kind of those, I eat when fed, like, I don't think about it, like, yeah, I'll eat, but, you know, and he's like, okay, how's your mood? And he kind of pieced together that you, my friend, seem to be depressed, like, clinically depressed, like, diagnosably, you know, not just bummed out, like, you know, quote-unquote normal people, but you may have yourself a condition that we want to look into. He wrote me a prescription for Zoloft and recommended that I, you know, seek therapy, which I did, and in talking to, you know, that person who was a, licensed clinical social worker, I believe is the official title. Wasn't actually a psychiatrist or psychologist, was a social worker, but knew her stuff, was trying to help. That's where I first got the diagnosis of, oh, hey, you're bipolar. And it kind of made sense. Like I said, for years I'd been, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek kidding around about being manic depressive, and lo and behold, turns out I was right. She referred me to a psychiatrist. For those of you, you know, keeping score at home, psychiatrists are the ones who can write prescriptions. Psychologists are the ones that will actually talk to you about things. Psychiatrists will talk to you for that first visit or two, but after that, it's just, let's check your blood work, let's get your script, thank you, have a good day. At least that's been my experience. But, you know, they kind of verified that's what it was and put me on valproic acid, otherwise known as Depakote. It's a drug they give to epileptics. But got put on a couple of drugs there. And it was basically explained to me that my condition was essentially the byproduct of chemical imbalances in my brain that regulate, emotions, happiness, sadness, etc. And this still kills me. They really don't know why the drugs work or how they work. They just know that, you know, we've tried these on people and people seem to get benefit from them. And because we don't know how any of these drugs actually work, we're going to try this and we'll see how it goes. And if it doesn't work, we can try something else. And we can kind of go through a variety of cocktails until we find something that seems to be working for you. I mean, it turns out that the first two things they put me on is the custom blend that I ended up with the whole time. I didn't really try a whole bunch of different things because it seemed to work. Like, the Zoloft kept me from getting too super bummed. The Depakote kind of, eased the mania end of it. And again, it's kind of hard to describe to someone who's not experienced and felt the how these conditions are and how the drugs can impact you. But it kind of, if you sort of picture, I'm gonna go all mathy on you, but like a sine wave where it goes up and down and up and down. The drugs don't stop it from being a wave. It doesn't turn you into a flat line, but it makes it so that the peaks aren't quite so high and the lows aren't quite so low. It kind of flattens that waveform out in terms of your mood. And the way that feels is, I don't want to oversimplify it and make it seem like I was walking around, completely numb like a zombie, but you experience and sense things at a diminished level on both sides. And it's a little weird. It's one of those things to where if that is what's needed for you to, be safe and healthy, and generally happy, absolutely do like the doctors say. For me, it was a bit much. I tend to think that I was maybe a little over-diagnosed, that I may, be bipolar, but I'm not quite that bipolar, if that makes any sense. I kind of feel like I was probably a little over-medicated. I mean, such to the point, and I'll sort of skip ahead a little bit here because I'm getting close to home. When I eventually left Florida to come back to Ohio, I did so without employment or insurance or any of those sorts of things. And so the stash of Zoloft and Depakote that I had stashed in my bag when I left was the last of it that I figured I was going to, get. Again, not having insurance or a job was going to make, getting refills a little tricky. And so knowing that those drugs are the kind that you have to, sort of start on slowly and build up in your system, and you also need to, wean yourself off of them, I immediately started that plan. And since I've done so, I have not had those drugs since, and I seem to be doing just fine. I attribute, a large portion of that to being in an environment where initially my family and then my friends and then once again with Abby, my family provided a very loving, supporting support structure for me. I've also managed to, eliminate or reduce most of my triggers for depression. I now am in communication with my daughter. We don't talk as often as I would like, but that's, probably on me as much as anything. But I can pick up a phone and call her, and I know that I can, and that makes all the difference. I've got a wonderful wife, and you know, three daughters. And so, you know, the loneliness piece is no longer, you know, a trigger. And I'm not, you know, rolling in dough, but I'm doing pretty okay for myself. I'm no longer, you know, in a paycheck to paycheck type situation. And that security also kind of takes away, you know, from that. I mean, that's not to say, oh, I'm cured, or, oh, I never get bummed, but it's nowhere near where it used to be on that end. On the manic side, I mean, I'm still kind of wacky, most of the time. I think that if there's anything where the mania still manifests, it tends to be when I'm stressed, like at work. I'll get, you know, sort of aggro, because that's the other, like, mania is one of, like, depression's depression. Like, you're bummed, you're sad, you're slothful, you're not having a good time. Mania can kind of swing one way or the other. You can be all wacky, crazy, you know, happy-go-lucky, bouncing off the walls, or you can be, you know, aggro, ranty man, you know, grump of the century, and, you know, be screaming and hollering at clouds. And I'd say, you know, occasionally that will rear its head. Goodness knows, you know, Abby and the girls can attest to Grumpy Todd coming out of the cave every now and again. You know, but it's fairly minor. It's fairly minimal. And I'm hesitant to say that, you know, I'm over it, or that, you know, I've been cured, because, you know, bipolar is not a thing. It's not really a phase. It's not a thing that's cured. If someone's suffering from that, that's a part of them. Like I said, I tend to think it's more a matter of, you know, I am just in a better situation and don't feel it as much as I, you know, once did. And like I said, I've got, you know, a lot of folks around me that, you know, love and support me, and kind of keep things from taking a dive. And again, I'm a lucky fella, you know, for that. There are a lot of folks in this world that, you know, don't have that going on. And if you happen to know one, you should reach out and try and help. You know, if you know anyone who suffers with, you know, depression or bipolar or really any sort of, you know, mental difficulties, you should try and help those folks out, because they really, really do need it. Like I said, I can speak to that from experience, and I can also speak to that from the experience of someone who's had folks help, and it really does, you know, make a difference and matter. That was maybe not the most fun podcast we've had to date, but I felt like it was probably an important story to tell. I feel like it's an important topic to discuss, and so, you know, we've done that, and you know, we can talk about, you know, other things that have happened, you know, things that I've caught on fire or broken or other ridiculous acts that have taken place. And, you know, there's, like I said, some of this stuff I've talked about here today is kind of an underlying silent theme that sort of, you know, is woven throughout some of these stories. And maybe that's, you know, useful background for you, in the context of what I'm talking about. But, you know, if there is a moral of the story, it's that, for anyone out there who has, you know, some mental concerns of their own, things can be okay. Things can get better. You know, seek help, surround yourself with people that will help you and not try and tear you down. You know, and you can get through this. For those of you who don't, who are lucky enough to not have, you know, those concerns yourself, you know, like I said, do what you can to try and, you know, help folks out. and we'll, you know, everybody will be better off for it. So, I'm about to pull back into my parking spot here at the house. I would like to thank you all for joining me, and everybody have yourselves a good one.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.